like to thank everybody for coming. I'm not going to bang on a can, experimental intermedia, CBGBs, all the other places people are playing tonight. I started doing my own pieces for flute about 1986, and it was also about the same time I started playing guitar with Reese Chatham, and I started playing bass in Band of Susans. And I think all of those things are related. I think basically I just was really sick of the flute and new music flute playing. The way the flute is normally used. I decided I played my last multiphonic one day. I just woke up and said, forget it. I'm not going to do this anymore. And so I started doing sort of what you might call anti-flute pieces. And tonight I'm going to play a collection of pieces I've done over the last 4 years that are kind of anti the tradition of the flute. The first piece uses just a head joint, and I don't know if everyone got a program, but the pieces that have the asterisk are all ones that I did when I was an artist in residence at Studio Pass, and there are backing tapes that go along with them. So this one is performed entirely on flute head joints. There are four tracks, two of alto flute, two of regular flute, and I don't use the rest of the flute at all. And it's really sort of a musical daydream, I guess. It was inspired by my favorite kind of cartoons where inanimate objects sort of come to life after everyone goes to sleep, start dancing around the kitchen. It's the idea that sounds, it's sort of addressing the question of which sounds are musical and which aren't. And in this one, as I said, it's kind of a daydream where sounds of objects in a room, like wind whistling in the window or clanking radiator and so on, after a while sort of come to life briefly and then drift off again. So, and it uses very illegally a clip from the soundtrack to Paris, Texas. ever learned to play on the flute was Mary Had a Little Lamb with just the head joint. So that's probably related to that too. This next piece takes a piece from the flute repertoire that every flutist plays about 500 times in school, and it's a piece I liked at first. It was always one of my favorites, but after a while, I began to have a more like a love-hate relationship with it. And in this piece, I actually recorded Syrinx by Debussy, which is the piece I'm talking about, and I actually cut it up in pieces. I made a backing tape that was made of three versions of this piece, interspliced, so that, in a sense, the original is fanned out to three times its length. And it was inspired by a Czech artist who I'm very interested in. His name is Jiří Kolář, who does the same sort of thing with visual images, found images. And he uses a lot of different techniques, but this was my favorite, where he uses multiple copies of a particular image and in a very systematic way intercuts or intersplices them so that it almost gives motion to the image. And this is one of the classics or the cliches, depending on which way you look at it, this piece in the flute repertoire. And it's a programmatic piece, and it's the story of Pan, who was chasing a nymph around named Syrinx, and in order to avoid him, she turned herself into a reed and then died, but at least avoided him. And I know what that feels like. And he was so bummed about this that he took the reed and played it like a flute, and this is supposed to be his lament for Syrinx, another guy who didn't get over. And what I do is I play against the backing tape, which I made actually in a very old-fashioned way. I actually sat there with little pieces of tape and cut them and spliced them, which took about 2 weeks before the age of sampling. And what I do live is, because the shape of the piece, it starts up high and it kind of gradually moves down to one of the lowest notes in the flute range. It's kind of this lament. The live flute is really just a distillation of that movement and kind of one long glissando from the note the piece begins on to the note the piece ends on. This next piece, called Structures of Everyday Life, is a piece that I did New Music America in 1987. I used 3 digital delays to build up a dense texture of long tones. And this was the first time I used electronics with any piece that I did. And it was really the first piece that I did on my own. And I think having that many digital delays at my disposal was a revelation for me, and I sort of had the choice to go wild in the melodic direction because you have so many opportunities for counterpoint and enhancing the melodic aspect of the flute. And of course, in my sort of dour mood that I described to you, I was very down on that. So I really was much more interested in subverting the melodic aspect of the flute and using it to play harmony. And so that's what I used the digital delays for, to be able to play against myself. First time I did this piece, I said that probably the reason why I was so excited about this aspect of using the digital electronics is because when I was 10 and I first got a flute, after I learned to play Mary Had a Little Lamb with this part and put it together, I was disappointed. I thought, because there were a lot of keys, that if you press more than one, you got more than one note at a time. It was really a drag when I found out, no matter how many you pressed, you only got one note. So it was great to be able to build up the sound like that. And I'd also worked with composer Phil Niblock, who does a lot of long tone, very densely textured pieces, but he does them with multi-track recordings. And I wanted to do something that would get that intensity of sound but not have to make backing tapes to actually do it live. So that's the way this piece is done. And again, there's a difference. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Phil's music, but he's somebody that was a very big influence on me. I think when I first heard his music, I thought it was the most beautiful music I'd ever heard. And he, Christian Wolff, John Cage, and Jackson the Glow are composers who really impressed me the most in my development. But Phil, really, his music was so different than anything else I'd heard. I wanted to do something. The way he makes his pieces is to very deliberately detune the intervals that are on the tape, and he's interested in the real spatial aspect of it and in the beating that you get when notes are very out of tune. Out of tune. But I was a lot more interested at the point when I started doing this in traditional harmony, because it was something, having been mainly a, quote, new music flutist, something that I didn't really do much with the flute. And so this piece takes the most basic harmonic icon in Western harmony, which is the 1-4-5-1 cadence, which, even if you don't know what that means technically, you know what it sounds like. It's just like progression ending in amen, kind of rounded out ending. That's very common in Western harmony. And so what this piece does over the course of about 18 minutes is that it moves through 4 chords only. And it does that through building up a chord with digital delays and then gradually adding leading tones, so that there's a period of dissonance in between each chord, and then it generally settles into the next chord and so forth. And one other aspect of change that goes through the progress of this piece is that I start with a very straight flute tone that comes from this mic, and it gradually is mixed with a distorted tone that's put through all these electronics here. That's this mic. And what Robert is doing is mixing the two, so that by the end, all you hear is distorted flute. And again, that aspect of the piece was probably a function of my getting very bored with the sine wave, you know, the very pure flute tone that is the the typical natural flute tone. And this is one way of transforming the timbre of the flute. I've tried many others.
Thank you.
next piece also works with long tones. It has a few significant differences from the piece before. This is a piece, there's a backing tape that I made when I was an artist in residence at Pass. And what you hear are 8 tracks of flute gradually changing into 8 tracks of guitar, electric guitar. And Robert Posky's been helping me with the technical aspect, is now going to play. This is another transformation piece that's really changing from a timbre that I got tired of to my favorite timbre in the world right now. So rather than doing it electronically the way I did in the piece before, this time I'm actually, the piece is actually changing from flute to guitar. There's not much looping in this piece or any kind of digital delay. There's some, but mainly what you hear is the backing tape that we're playing against. And it's called Route 666, and it's a gradual change from a perfect fourth to a tritone, often known as the devil's interval in the Middle Ages. So it goes from what was considered in Western harmony to be one of the most perfect consonant intervals to the most dissonant.
Thank you.
The last piece is very, very short, kind of a musical cartoon, also reeking with hostility towards flute and flute players. I heard there's a great flute joke. Wait, what is it? I've heard so many variations about doctors, lawyers, but my favorite one is the flute variation. What do you call 10,000 flutes or flutists at the bottom of the ocean?
A star.
A star. Yes. So this little piece is sort of an illustration of the cartoon on the program, which, by the way, is courtesy of Steve Albini. I have a small speaking part in this.